Welcome to the Naturally Nourished podcast that delivers cutting-edge food as medicine solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought up by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only. Now welcome, Integrative Dietitians Allie Miller and her co-host Becky Yu.
Welcome to the Naturally Nourished podcast. You are joining us for episode 391, Microplastics. We will be covering what they are, where they're found, how they impact your body, and then, of course, most importantly, what you can do to reduce exposure, impact, as well as food as medicine and supplement solutions to offset any exposure or any of the kind of inevitable exposures, because it seems like they're everywhere.
Yes, no doubt. Literally, they are anywhere from vinyl to food packaging to polymers to, of course, the known of plastic water bottles. Microplastics are finding their way into our groundwater, our soil, ultimately even our plants, which means our fruits and vegetables. And that's even without the coating of a peel or something like that added on top of it. So today, like you said, Becky, we're going to cover the health impact. We're going to cover what we're seeing in the research as far as disease pathology, and then how you can get these nasty things out of your body beyond reducing exposure and making a lifestyle change.
Yes.
I've been really excited to put this information together. It's kind of a sister component of our glyphosate episode we put out a month back. This is going to be one component of my lecture that I'm doing at Rome Ranch in the What Good Shall I Do event, which will be this upcoming week. I'm super stoked to be out there. Stay tuned. I'm sure we'll be talking about everything we learn about regenerative agriculture. And my lecture is all about unpacking the three primary industrialized forms of toxins and how we can address with functional medicine approaches. So I'm hitting on glyphosate, microplastics that we'll unpack today. And then coming down the pipeline is going to be all about EMF and digging into frequencies in the sound system, nervous system, and how to offset the influence of the electromagnetic field imbalance from 5G and et cetera.
Very cool stuff. Before we get into all that, just a real quick last call for our Beat the Bloat live program. So as of the airing of this episode, we just launched a couple of days ago on April 10th, and we will still allow you to jump in to catch the remaining three live classes. And every participant has access to watch and rewatch the replay in case they missed the live. A lot of people actually do it that way anyway, because maybe they can't, you know, swing the lunch hour timeframe and they watch it the next morning or something like that. So only $99, you can still grab a spot over at AllieMillerRD.com.
Yes, you'll still get all the value. You will get the protocol, the ebook. You will get access to our Slack, which is our chat forum where you can ask specific questions. And that's really where Becky and I handhold and support through troubleshooting your protocol. And like Becky said, many of our participants that purchased this timely even may still have not watched class one. So you won't be behind, but do go ahead to go on over to AllieMillerRD.com under books and programs, grab a spot in the Beat the Bloat live program for just $99 for 3 months of support to make sure that your microbiome is working for you. And surprise, surprise, we'll even talk today about how probiotics can be a form of aiding in offsetting the influence of microplastics.
All right. One last thing before we jump in, let's just have a quick word from our sponsor, Noble Origins.
Yes. So Noble Origins provides an organ complex that is a powdered blend of high quality beef organs from New Zealand. These are grass-fed sourced, and it is an organ blend combining beef liver, heart, kidney, pancreas, and spleen. This really provides that snout-to-tail approach of supporting the vital organs of the animal as nutritional supplementation in an easy-to-consume delivery of a powder. So you can do this in a once a day protein shake, add the Noble Origins complex to a savory sauce. And this is a really great way to get nature's multivitamin in a convenient delivery. They also have a blend of beef protein powder with colostrum and organs combined. And then I generally go for the red bag, which is the organ complex itself. And that's what I then add into smoothies, adding grass-fed whey or other whole food nourishment. We'll talk in this episode also about the influence of chlorella, just like we did with the glyphosate one. So that's something that I've been adding in that E3 Live as we talk about with our Super Greens Cube. And in the episode where we do a revamp of the Athletic Greens, we use Noble Origins as a form of our multivitamins. So we'll link that video in case you missed it on the naturally nourished approach to a green smoothie replacing Athletic Greens. And to get nature's multivitamin in the form of grass-fed, pasture-raised organs, go on over to nobleorigins.com. That's NOBLEORIGINS.com/discount/AllieMillerRD. And you will save at checkout.
All right, let's dig in and just start with the basics of what are microplastics? How small are they? Can we see them? I kind of want to hear just the framework for that.
Yes. So microplastics are small plastic fragments, and they are going to be defined as a size that is less than 5 millimeters, so slightly larger than an eighth of an inch. So this would be visible by the naked eye, if you will. There is a subcategory of microplastics that also includes, though, nanoplastics. And nanoplastics are also going to be a form of a synthetic polymer. And these dimensions are going to range from 1 nanometer to 1 micrometer. So for perspective in the size of this, this is the width of a single human hair, would be actually looking at 20 to 200 micrometers. So if you can't really fully see the width of a human hair when looking at it, this is now getting more microscopic to get that 1 nanometer to 1 micrometer of a nanoplastic. But microplastics could be visible to the human eye.
Got it. Okay. And when did this start to become a big issue? How long have we been kind of talking about this?
I mean, it's been on the rise since the 1950s. So even if you think of beverages and the commercial beverage industry, you know, Coca-Cola, all of the pops, et cetera, first were at soda fountains, right? And then they were sold in glass only. The dairy man would bring only your glass delivery of your milk. So since the 1950s, we've actually seen more than 10 billion metric tons of plastics manufactured worldwide. And the most incorporated into the global waste trade. We're seeing 79% of plastic humans have thrown away, piling up into landfills and being scattered across both the land as pollution and in our oceans. And the concern is that only 9% of plastics have actually been recycled. So even if you're sorting your plastics, the majority of them actually because of various hindrances to the recycling process. So we're seeing the majority of them being burned or incinerated and or sent to landfills. And these are going to influence a buildup in our environment that now we're seeing plastic particles in the soil, the air, so you can inhale microplastics, and also, of course, in our water systems. The chemical-laced microplastic particles can now be found even in plants, as well as the bodies of animals. So we'll talk about fish in the ocean, for instance, various land animals. And we're, of course, seeing them now pretty much ubiquitous in humans when we're looking especially at the adipocytes or the fat tissues in the body. In 2019, plastic producers reported creating 368 million metric tons of plastic. And that number is expected to surge to 1.5 billion metric tons per year. That's not cumulative. So from 368 million metric tons just to a couple years ago, 4 years ago, to 1.5 billion metric tons by the year 2050 as the petrochemical infrastructure expands globally.
Okay, so these are really big numbers. The level of input is wild and just really continuing to increase. And instead of, you know, developing specific plans for handling this mess, what the plastic industry seems to do is spread misinformation that, you know, continues to perpetuate with these limited interventions. So we're looking at recycling. We're looking at, oh, this paper straw campaign that never really went anywhere. I was just in Mexico and I'm like, oh, they're back to plastic straws, even, you know, in these places that actually have sea turtles right here on the beach. Or taking away the plastic bags. You know, I was in Connecticut recently and you actually can't get a plastic bag anymore at the grocery store up there. Or some places you actually have to pay per plastic bag. And so it seems like really limited instead of, you know, actually reducing the plastic production.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of, if you would call it like greenwashing, right, in this space. The biggest plastic focused industry groups, so often referred to as plastics in caps, which is the Plastics Industry Association, and the American Chemistry Council, they are in this solution-based, in air quotes, campaigns to aid, you know, a quote-unquote reduction of plastic waste, while all while they're putting their foot on the gas pedal to produce more plastic. So I think that that's something that's really important to call out. And when we're talking about a lot of these organizations that are known to be, again, green, or talking about carbon sequestering, the concept that plastic comes from a petrochemical fuel source, you know, the entire production of plastic requires petrochemical fuels, I think is also often not discussed.
Sure. And where are these microplastics found, like beyond a plastic bag or a plastic bottle? Let's talk about some of the like surprising places where we're seeing them.
So we break them into primary and secondary forms of microplastics. So primary forms are going to be those that are intentionally produced for commercial use. These are often like small particles that are used in cosmetics, like microbeads. Remember that was a big thing like in the early 2000s or late 90s of like microbeads in your toothpaste. Microbeads in your, I don't know, face wash.
Face scrubs,
I think,
and things
of like
that.
The Johnson & Johnson, like, what's that whole line called?
I don't know, like clear. The acne line or whatever, cleaning
all about the microbeads. That was like a deep conversation. Microbeads are really going to be some of those primary in the cosmetic world. Pellets in artificial grass, shedding from microfiber production into fishing nets or clothing. And it's important to note that I've noticed this with Stells for sure. Like if we buy clothes at Target or wherever and I let her wear them without washing them, you know, there's often some like dermatological irritation. But also we have to be mindful of doing that primary washing to remove the microplastics that are in our clothes. Sometimes I'm definitely someone that's guilty of like, oh, I can wear it once and then wash it. But especially like I'm wearing a ALO yoga jumpsuit right now. That would be something that would be really important to ensure is rinsed and washed first before putting on my body when I'm sweating and exercising.
I don't know how deep we're going to go into like the yoga pants conversation, but I know you and I are both always searching for something that actually still holds you in and holds its shape, but isn't made from these microplastic type fibers.
Synthetic fibers are rough. So primary microplastics are going to be those that enter the environment or our bodies through direct use or, you know, unintentionally. And then secondary microplastics, which is actually the majority, these result from the littered, so like the second time around of exposure, if you will. So the littered larger plastic pieces that will corrode over time. So plastic does not biodegrade, but of course it will be impacted by weather conditions like sunlight, saltwater, wind, sand, any abrasive compound. And this will shed small plastic particles, which then leak into nature. So this would be from pollution or from dump sites. And we see that overall, whether from primary or secondary microplastics, that humans ingest an estimated 5 grams of microplastics per week. So that's actually getting to like a measurable weighted amount. This is equivalent to about a credit card worth of these microplastics that, again, you know, could be in that nanoplastic smaller than the size of the width of a human hair, or, you know, looking to be more at that visible 5 millimeter measurement.
Yikes. So let's talk maybe how we're actually ingesting these. So we're actually like eating them and drinking them, not just being exposed on clothing and kind of external factors in the environment, but we're consuming them. How are they getting yes. in our bodies?
So the biggest areas that we've identified, and I do not believe that this is comprehensive yet, because what's interesting as I was digging into the research is a lot of these studies before 2017 used a larger size of microplastic assessment of greater than 10. And so a lot of these foods didn't show a residue until they adjusted that to the actual now definition of microplastic, which is the less than 5 value, right?
Okay.
And so when I looked into the research, it looks like bottled water is for sure, bar none, the number one exposure. And we see bottled water to potentially comprise upwards of 90%+ of the exposure of microplastics in consumption items, followed actually by beer, which is interesting. And that came up time and time again. Even though beer generally isn't served in plastic, it's the brewing vats.
And like all the tubing and hoses and things.
The yeast, and that fermentation actually breaks down the microplastics. Didn't see the same about wine, interestingly enough. And actually, I do know a lot of wineries that use beyond like oak or casks. They're actually using more organic material or cement and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they're actually looking for the leach from the material to contribute to the wine.
Sure.
Whereas beer is looking for that kind of sterile plastic,
sure.
which has not turned up to be good. Actually, it looked like 30-something% coming from beer. Following that is air, following tap water. So interestingly enough, although we talk a lot about the microplastics in our oceans, as we talked about in our seafood episode on why you should eat more fish, which we will link here, seafood comprises less than 2% potentially as of the contributing factors of microplastic buildup. And as we did see, you know, for fish species in the study, average consumption would be less than 1,000 microplastics a year, even if consuming fish twice per week. So that seems like, yes, we do want to be mindful that, of course, commercial fish, especially those farm raised, would have significantly higher amounts of microplastics. But we do see concern of like even the fish breakdown, and we did see fillets and organs of fish in both wild and farm raised to have presence of microplastic, just different types of microplastics and different concentration. Also, I will call out, since we're on it, oysters as a filter in the ocean. These may come up as a listed high item as exposure to microplastics, but there was a study done by the Marine Environmental Research that looked at oysters as selective suspension feeders, not necessarily consuming all the particles that they're exposed to. So maybe they're a little bit selective mm-hmm. as filters. Actually, we looked at concentrations in polymers across oysters, water, marine snow, and sediment on recreational beds. And we found that microplastic concentrations were low and the polymers in oysters don't align with those in the surrounding environment. So they tend to actually not be gobbling up or retaining. If they are, they must be excreting when we're looking at actually oysters as a bioindicator. So they're actually a poor bioindicator of the pollution in the area because they don't seem to take up as much as what was once assumed.
Got it. And I think, you know, for fish and oysters and any seafood, I think, you know, we try to think about where they came from and how clean that source of the yes. water is. So like Gulf oysters, I won't touch them with a 10-foot pole, even, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. if they are fried and cooked, which is what people like to do with them.
Not to mention it's hot and high risk of pathogen.
Yes, yes. But just going out to somewhere like Galveston, you see the oil rigs, mm-hmm. you know, lined up across. The water is brown. I'm not going to eat oysters from yes. the Gulf of Mexico, most likely. But, you know, somewhere that really doesn't have a lot of plastic contamination, cleaner water, better environmental standards, potentially even other countries or Canada, maybe we're going to feel better about consumption there.
Yes. And although we're seeing, you know, now when we're looking at human studies, high concentration and bioaccumulation of microplastics, just because there are food studies that show potential sources, again, fish being less than 2%, we have to think of the environmental exposure, as we just mentioned, you know, cosmetics, clothing, and even the air in your household, which we'll get into. Filtering the air in your household is such a huge component of reducing microplastics. And, you know, that's where you spend the majority of your time. So thinking about always the whole picture versus just getting myopic or tunnel vision on worrying about one tiny element and knowing the benefits of the omega omega-3s and astaxanthin and antioxidants. And that's kind of what we unpack in that fish episode.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about maybe inhaled exposure and how else we're getting them into the body. I'm curious about the air.
Yeah. So, you know, the two primary routes of exposure are going to be inhalation and ingestion. And inhalation can cause physical damage to the lungs. Ingestion, of course, we're looking at influence on the gut and the microbiome, as well as the liver. And then both of them, when they reach the bloodstream, can play a role on systemic inflammatory processes, play a negative influence on energy metabolism, or drive higher accumulation of fat deposits in the body. And many of them, of course, have endocrine disrupting effects, which can influence reproductive health or driving increased risk for infertility. So I think the known, like you said, the plastic shopping bags and those plastic water bottles are big. And the World Health Organization in 2019 commissioned a report to evaluate the risks of human health associated with nano and microplastic particles in drinking water, including tap. But a key observation to not overlook is that microplastics are ubiquitous in the environment, and they've been detected in the environmental media. So there's direct relevance for human exposure in our air and in our dust. So, you know, again, things that we are breathing in the house are a huge component. And we've seen that particles and fiber toxicology indicate that particles that are less than 10 nanomoles are probably taken up biologically. So again, less than 5 is kind of the gold standard. Less than 10 is what was studied prior. But we are seeing influence of bioaccumulation in the human body from either ingestion of consumption orally or inhaling.
And then let's talk about this kind of indirect environmental and maybe agriculture exposure as well, because I know that we can see maybe there's plastic in the soil, and then does that get taken up into our foods or things that we grow? Or maybe we're trying to plant a garden in an area that was, you know, previously industrial wasteland or whatnot. So does that impact the food quality, and does it get into our food?
Totally. So, you know, microplastics are persistent pollutants, right? And they end up in various ecosystems. We've seen when looking at agricultural soils that also, of course, now mind you, in the industrialized agricultural movement, many pesticides as well as fertilizers use microplastics as delivery nanoparticles. And so this is one of the mechanisms of bioaccumulation in the soils and then runoff into the water. We know that when we look at soil aeration, that microplastics will drive an increase in soil aeration, water repellence, so that water's kind of bouncing off, just like plastic would bead, right? And this will over time decrease soil bulk density and soil aggregate sizes. We also know that due to the smaller size and the high absorption capacity, microplastics can adhere to the surfaces of both seeds and roots of plants, actually either inhibiting seed germination or interfering with the growth process. So we've seen microplastics through agriculture research influencing root elongation, influencing the absorption of water and nutrients, ultimately inhibiting plant growth based on micronutrient deficiency in the plant structure. We've seen the nanoplastics can actually be absorbed by the roots of a plant, move to the stems, leaves, and the fruit of the plant. And so this is the consumption elements of the plant, right? Fruit would be like the bell pepper of a pepper plant, etc. And we're seeing that these microplastics will drive an oxidative stress response in the plant as well. So more complex chemical and physiological phenomenons we're seeing in plants that have more vasculature, more intake from the root system. And we're seeing a ROS buildup, or reactive oxygen species buildup, in these plants. So they can actually induce toxicity to plant cells and to the genetic material in plants, leading to changes in plant growth, mineral photosynthesis, toxin accumulation, and influencing the metabolites in plant tissues. And then what's more is that the soil microorganisms themselves, so what's around the plant, not only is the plant taking up, but the soil microorganisms can be affected by microplastics. And we can see on this level sterility or more oxidative stress on the soil, less viable, live, diverse soil, and an abnormal gene expression seen in the other collaborative microorganisms in the soil. So for instance, they've tested earthworms and they found that earthworms are actually both consuming and transporting microplastics.
Okay. So it's literally, they're everywhere. And then I saw this in your notes that even the compostable plastics can be a source of microplastics. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So it's 90% as far as it to be called compostable, 90% by weight has to be broken down to less than 2 millimoles. But again, when we're looking at this amount, 10% can still be transformed into the biomass, or actually all of it can be fragmented into these microplastics. So it's just that it's breaking down, right? Uh-huh. And may not be a more favorable option.
Okay. So again, that greenwashing, it's like, it actually could be worse.
Because they biodegrade and could be, again, more vastly distributed in the soil, if you will.
Right.
Because they're becoming more nano versus the micro. And then, you know, when we're looking just for another measurement beyond that plastic credit card a day that most Americans are consuming, we see that a liter of bottled water includes upwards of 240,000 tiny pieces of plastic. So about 90% of the plastic fragments, that we see, or pieces that we see in that liter of bottled water, are going to be the nanoplastic. So not visible, of course, right? It would look clear or invisible to the human eye. And then 10 or 100 times more plastic particles than we've seen in earlier studies, because those earlier studies looked at the larger microplastics that are only visible.
Got it. So the whole thing about like, oh, maybe bottled water when you're traveling isn't so bad. I think I'm going to have to be making alternate plans. That's scary. And even if you take the bottled water and pour it into your stainless steel, it's like it's at that point too late.
Yeah. I mean, and especially as we've talked on past episodes, we will relink our water episode where we talk about rainwater reverse osmosis. Of course, interestingly enough, not to jump too fast, but I'll just cover it now. Boiling water from tap, because tap water actually in itself is a source of microplastics, right? Because the groundwater is contaminated. So that makes sense. And the, you know, municipal water filtration plants are not right now set to filter out any form of micro or nanoplastics. And so when we look at tap water, we have seen that boiling, especially the harder tap water out there, because it has larger particles, it actually can bind with the microplastics and be left behind in sediment. But then the catch 22 there is that when you boil your tap water, you increase fluoride.
Great.
So definitely a filtration is going to be more important than what you can do with just adjusting your tap water from that boil.
Totally. Okay. So let's talk about just how microplastics actually impact our human health. What's the mechanism of action and how dangerous are these guys?
So like I started to say, you know, they can impact, of course, as an inhalant respiratory system and stress to the lungs, as well as increasing risk for lung cancers. We know that those that are consumed could also impact direct gut, but then both can impact us systemically once hitting the bloodstream. So whether ingested or inhaled, they can lead to an immune reaction by the body, which could create autoimmune reactivity or suppress the immune system, or create severe immune reactions, or drive cancer because it's distracting the surveillance system of the body. So when your body is hit with microplastics, it basically responds just like it's fighting a virus or bacteria. So it could have an upregulation of an inflammatory response. And if that's chronic and constant, that's where we can see immune dysregulation. Then what's more is that many of these fillers, lubricants, dyes, and other forms of microplastics out there are also going to be endocrine disruptors, which can interfere with both our reproductive hormones, influencing birth defects, developmental disorders, infertility, as well as beyond the endocrine system, beyond sex hormone, influencing a risk for insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, blood sugar dysregulation, as well as increased risk for hypothyroidism and autoimmune-based Hashimoto's thyroidism, as well as cancer in any of these tissues of the body.
Okay. And then we're finding microplastics actually in our arteries as well?
Yeah. So there was a study that came out just recently looking at the presence of microplastics in plaque, and they found a 4.5-fold increase of risk of heart attack, stroke, or death for those that had microplastics accumulated in their arteries. And 60% of the patients that were assessed had microplastics in their arteries. So again, you know, this is something that we're really looking at hitting, because these polymers or these synthetic compounds build up and they have their own mechanism of action that can interfere with the homeostatic balance of the body of how to regulate, for instance, tissue function. And what's more is we're seeing microplastics even influencing on an epigenetic level. We're seeing that plastic can actually change the DNA. It can influence human cells, which of course can influence then the function of reproducing our cells. And that's where we can get into the increased risk for cancer. Dr. Yvonne Merpuri is a leading hormone specialist, and she goes out to say that microplastics are the number one threat to humankind. She believes that all humankind could be wiped out within 200 years unless urgent action is taken to reduce the plastic pollution and the ubiquitous exposure to microplastics. I think I've hit all these, but she says that microplastics can drive abnormal development of illnesses over the past 5 decades that we've seen continue to rise. And this ranges from male and female infertility to obesity to diabetes to cancer to heart attacks, cognitive decline, behavioral issues, and even other brain-related problems such as ADHD.
Okay, so they're causing a lot of problems, clearly. And is this something where it's like everybody's got them in their body? What kind of testing can we even do? Is there a way to know like our level? How does that work?
Yes. So I think that, like I said, we'll see more and more research now with a more sensitive marker of that less than 5. Most of the studies currently on microplastics are looking at serum, which might not be as accurate as adipocytes or doing a fat sample assessment, like we talk about with other environmental toxins. So I think as we look at adipocytes, we're going to see across the board. But generally, when we look at studies in the serum, we're seeing somewhere upwards of 80% of specimens or adults that are assessed having traces of various forms of microplastics. And we're seeing about half of the samples assessed having these PET plastics, which are what are used in drink bottles. We're seeing about a third of those that had microplastics coming from polystyrenes, which is more of like the disposable food containers or electronics or even automobile parts. So it can even be transdermal, like through the skin, getting that bioavailability. And then about a quarter of those assessed had polyethylene, which is going to be the most common form of plastic used today. What's more concerning, as we've talked about with detox, et cetera, is that the human placenta is able to absorb 50, 80, and 240 nanometers of polystyrene beads and possibly also micro-sized polypropylene, which is a plastic that's used in packaging, cleansing products, first aid products, and more.
Yikes. So everybody's got them. They're everywhere. Let's cover, we want to talk, you know, how to avoid exposure as well as food as medicine and supplements. But I think one of the most compelling ways to actually address this, if you're like, oh my God, what can I do? Like literally right now, to address this toxicity is through sauna and sweat.
Research shows that far infrared saunas may work better than like a steam sauna, because that deep infrared energy in the body may have a better detoxification process and also, we know that individuals tolerate that deep infrared for longer periods of time or higher temperatures than a traditional steam sauna because it doesn't have that respiratory impact or as much of an impact even on stressing the system. It's less of a stressor, so the body doesn't feel like it has to white knuckle as much in an infrared. We know that looking at research on phthalates, for instance, which is a known form of microplastics that's also an endocrine disruptor, they assessed blood, urine, and sweat collected from 20 individuals, 10 that were healthy participants and 10 that were dealing with health problems. We see all patients had phthalates in their blood, sweat, and urine. But several individuals, there was higher amounts of phthalate or a particular derivative, the DEHP versus the MEHP. These are just components of phthalates. Higher amounts were found in the sweat, but some were not found in the serum of a different form of molecule. So this notes that potentially the phthalate retention and bioaccumulation occurs in the body and that sweat, even in the form that was found in sweat, blood, and urine, sweat was twice as high as the urinary output. So this concludes that perspiration could be a way to facilitate the elimination of toxic phthalates. And that's just what was assessed. Likely there were other forms of microplastics that were carried out with that sweat detox response.
Okay. So we'll definitely link the sunlight and infrared sauna. But I think getting outside and sweating too, you know, to the best of your ability, like working up a daily sweat could be magic for actually upregulating and excreting these from the body.
Well, and the sun is the most natural form of infrared ray. Yeah, yeah. So as long as you aren't covering your skin or using sunscreen, you're going to get more of that infrared response, especially when outside in the earlier hours or, you know, when we're seeing more color in the sky is generally an indicator also that you're getting more of that natural red infrared light. So that's something to consider as well. And then, you know, mobilizing our fat is really where we're starting to see this influence. So, you know, as we're sweating, the liberation is going to be from those phthalates, from that bodily fat tissue or those adipocytes, and they have to be mobilized and released into the sweat. And so when we're looking at accelerating that excretion process, we would also want to consider fasting, which would, of course, aid in adipocyte breakdown or instead of seeing a buildup of fat cells through lipogenesis, we're actually going to see that lipolysis occur or that breaking of fat cells when we're in a fasted state, or even a ketogenic diet could be another supporting way of detox and removing that buildup.
Yeah. So I think another argument for, you know, having less body fat, other than just wanting to fit into your clothes and whatnot, but actually could affect the levels of these things in your body. And I'm sure supporting detox, I'm sure we're going to get to that, but I think all the more important, the more body fat that you have, we're going to assume there's more bioaccumulation just kind of by volume of microplastics. So as you're sweating and doing your sauna and doing keto and fasting and losing weight, you really want to make sure that you are kind of safeguarding your healthy cells, utilizing something like our, you know, Reset Restore and new detox packs in there.
Yes, to provide an abundance of nourishment to the phase one and phase two detox pathways in the body is one of the safest investments to ensure that you're actually getting that encapsulation and excretion of the various forms of the microplastics. And to add kind of that connection on metabolism, Becky, if you're someone listening that has done everything and you're not seeing body fat loss or you're not seeing the scale budge, that could be an indicator that your body is holding that excessive fat store to protect you. Mm-hmm. And you really have to go into a deeper, longer, maybe instead of our 10-day detox, you know, really doing that 10-day detox protocol for an entire month period of time and keeping those Reset, Restore, Renew detox packs at 2 to 3 per day for that 30-day window to really get that deep abundance of nutrients that will help to mobilize the toxins out of the body. And then we might see the liberation of fat and favorable metabolism.
Before we go on to more solutions, I want to call this out just because I see it on social media everywhere. I know every time I'm at the grocery store, I'm like, oh my gosh, don't give me that receipt.
Yes.
And I freak the cashiers out where I'm like, no, no receipt, no receipt. I don't want it. Or I like touch it gingerly with like one finger and throw it in the bag and figure out what to do about it. But receipts and then the interior of hot coffee cups, I know, have been really buzzworthy about delivery of microplastic.
Yes. So receipts, I think, got a big hit because of the BPA. And BPA is really kind of one of those first microplastics to have any consumer awareness. You know, when we've started, I mean, I've been now for over 15 years talking about BPA free lined cans.
Right.
And like the idea that
glass.
And the idea that, you know, BPA leaches out of plastics with acids in foods or with higher temperature exposure. Don't microwave in your plastics. Right. And then you'll see like the Nalgene water bottles that are BPA free. So BPA is the bisphenol A, the primary microplastic that we'll see in receipts. And yes, this can also be concerning because it is an endocrine disruptor, and it is both delivered with warmth, often with that laser printer, and the type of material in the receipt is very bioavailable on a transdermal level. So by touch, yes, can absolutely absorb that microplastic into the tissue. And I think, yes, leaving your receipt, asking for an emailed receipt would be one strategy there. And making sure otherwise we're washing our hands following exposure. But then the question is, in the commercial hand soaps, there are actually a lot of microplastics.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Okay.
Because that's what creates those foaming, those foaming emulsions, if you will. Some of those, like I said, those like nano micro beads we'll still see in some of these hand soaps, et cetera. So avoiding receipts, I think, is big. And then I think the big duh that a lot of individuals who are getting their like organic matchas on the go, et cetera, they might know that, yes, drinking through the lid of the coffee cup is plastic. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're taking their lid off. But we have to imagine that if that is a paper coffee cup or a paper cup of any form to deliver water through or liquid through, that that would penetrate. So there is a polymer or a liner in there. And that form of microplastic, again, with a hot beverage in there, is going to leach. So our friends at Fond Bone Broth, for instance, actually just did a piece on this. They pulled a video from Paul Saladino sharing about that arterial plaque buildup from the microplastics and why they're so committed to doing their bone broth in glass jars, which we love. And we'll, of course, link Fond Bone Broth. You can save using Ali Miller RD. Not only do they use artisanal well water, so there's that of their like cooking liquid being free, ideally, or lessened of microplastics at least. We're looking at then that glass as the carrier, because a lot of the bone broth on the market is in those, you know, lined, what are they called? I guess this aseptic lined cartons, if you will. And the liner in the carton, again, like is going to be a leach material or a plastic bag would be something else that we'd be concerned about, of course.
Right. And just being in that over long term, sitting on the shelf, even if it was cooled to room temperature before putting it in there, what if the customer runs it under hot water to thaw said bone broth, which I know I've done before with like the plastic bag type of brand.
Sure. So
good to know.
Good, better, best, you know, and so I think we select where we can there. And the other thing I just want to call out that's a commonplace is tea bags.
Yes.
So there have been various assessments, and I think that this is one that actually hit consumer awareness prior to coffee cups and, and tops, which is kind of shocking because there's kind of a big duh there. But when tea bags switched to these polymers, right, a lot of them are actually comprised of various forms of microplastics that hold the tea in. And so when you're steeping that into warm water, that's going to also create, again, more breakdown of these micro and nanoplastics, which means you're drinking and consuming them, which is why we are so proud with the Naturally Nourished tea line to share loose leaf tea. And as we've discussed and linked, you know, using glass with a metal filtration or using a stainless steel tea ball to fill your loose leaf tea in, all of these would be the way to get the antioxidants, which we'll talk about EGCG and how it can actually combat microplastics in the body. But you're able to get those antioxidants, those catechins, those disease-fighting compounds without a side dose of microplastics. So loose leaf tea, organic, is the way to go.
Yes. And I think there are a lot of, you know, small household switches that we can make like that. I'm just thinking about, we like fell back into using Ziploc bags again somewhat recently when I was doing like the stasher type of bags or more of like a reusable beeswax type of thing. So like looking through your pantry and your closet and as you run out of something, maybe that's the time that you make the switch over to a glass container or something that won't have that same effect of potentially leaching plastic, because I think it's very overwhelming, like thinking about everywhere that it could be possibly touching us. You know, the Naturally Nourished supplement line, that's why we put everything in glass bottles, even though we've gotten the question of like, well, can we recycle them? And what do we do with the glass bottles and whatnot? But I think, you know, that's one way of just making sure your products, to the extent that you can, are coming in glass, maybe paying a little extra for things that actually do come in glass. And then skincare is like a whole other bucket of worms, but we've talked on past episodes. I'll link some of those on
wardrobe.
Yep.
And you know, again, you just kind of make your trade-offs for the time, right? And so, you know, I'm in the skincare world leaning deeply into just like food is medicine for your face, right? So it's going to be either, you know, the Tupes and Co. Organics or Ashley's Grace Holistic Skin. And then if I have to shoot and do something on camera, I'm probably going to wear something on my face that has some level of something that's a concern. Sure. But there's a good, better, best line to it. There's like the Ilia brand.
A couple months.
Yes. Same thing with wardrobe, right? So with clothing, it's like the most important clothing is like what I'm wearing in my sauna is going to be organic underpants, organic cotton underpants, and a organic cotton shelf-lined bra. And that's it. And then making sure that I don't use like a weird towel fibered microfiber towel in my sauna to wipe off the sweat that has like the beaded nanoparticles, right? Like just an organic linen would be appropriate in that delivery because you're at more of an exposure and more of that upregulation or release purge mode.
Girl, you got me thinking about how many years I did hot yoga using that towel, a mat with goodness knows what, and then wearing the plastic on my skin. Oh my goodness. But now we know.
Now we know. So let's go into kind of a shift of hope and what we can bring in abundance. So there's ways to navigate and absolutely fear is, you know, the number one driver of chronic illness. So we're not going to say that this is driving the end of the world, X, Y, Z, but we need to be mindful, aware, and make trade-offs. And what's lovely in the world of food as medicine is we're seeing a lot of studies on polyphenols and their ability to offset the influence of toxic plastic compounds. So I'm going to link a research study from Science Direct that literally breaks down, I believe it's six different classifications of microplastics, but they basically go through the mechanisms of polyphenols versus the influence of toxic plastic compounds. So the toxic plastic compounds can drive issues of neurotoxicity, of immunotoxicity, of sterility, of kidney issues or nephrotoxicity. We can see issues in the sexual organs and reproductive health. We can see carcinogenicity or driving of cancer risk. And then in the polyphenol world, we see the neuroprotective effects. We see the reverse of the immunosuppressive effects. We see the nephroprotective effects or kidney supporting effects, right? We see the hepatoprotective effects on the liver. We see the protection of gonads or reproductive organs. We see reduced levels of DNA damage versus that genotoxicity. And then we see the anti-carcinogenic effects. So literally there's a counterpart when we consume a diet rich in polyphenols. And I'm thinking about that, you know, as we've talked about like organic growing methods of plants and how plants that are stressed by the elements actually create more antioxidants. It'll be interesting to see over time when we look at, you know, that soil exposure and the fact that roots are taking in the microplastics, are they also creating some plant-based superfood compound that helps to support humans in detoxifying due to that, you know, stressor or that stimulus? And I believe that that's very possible because I believe that God provides and there's always that nature provided solution to the man-made problem, if you will. But this research study breaks down various forms. So curcumin, for instance, which is in turmeric, curcumin has been attributed with antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, antibiotic, antibacterial effects and has been shown to be highly protective against the enteropathogenic bacteria and mycotoxins that we can see in the soil. It's also a favorable tool for major intestinal pathogens, so supporting in the human body. We see that there's a protective effect of polyphenols that can actually impact our entire antioxidant system, which is important because one of the mechanisms of the microplastics is to drive up free radical exposure, drive up the reactive oxygen species, and to tax various enzyme pathways of detoxification and antioxidant production, if you will. And so when we're looking at a lot of these studies, we're looking at, for instance, like the GST pathway as a mechanism of how glutathione levels will be depleted in individuals that have excessive amounts of microplastics.
Okay, so turmeric might be something that we're adding to our kind of food medicine belt, if you will, or maybe we are, you know, taking super turmeric or inflammasome to kind of offset that influence and just, you know, eating a high amount of herbs, seasoning, spices, you know, colorful vegetables and fruits to get all of those polyphenol influences. And then to call out a specific polyphenol, I want to talk about lycopene, which is found in tomatoes.
Yes. So lycopene can actually reduce the oxidative stress of the nanoparticles of plastics. And this has been studied. It's actually referenced in this research study when they break down BPA. So like I said, this study looks at various forms of the microplastics and then has these really powerful diagrams showing all of the mechanisms of actions in which polyphenols inhibit the pathways of destruction of that said compound. So lycopene was one that was really highlighted in the BPA world. So I guess if you have to touch a receipt or have to have a canned beverage or a canned food, ideally, again, looking for BPA-free lining and more of like a porcelain lined, et cetera. But you could also have some organic cooked down tomatoes. We find that tomatoes are higher in lycopene when they're actually heat processed. So this would be recommendation to like can from your garden in a glass jar. And that would have a really good concentration, like in a marinara, if you will, or doing like an organic glass jar stored marinara would be another great delivery of that lycopene.
It's super interesting to think about the tomato products in the cans, you know, where it's like it is more acidic, but also those are higher lycopene delivery products. So that's kind of offsetting. I don't know how much that offsets, but at least would help.
Yes. And so then this article also breaks down this whole class of acrylonitrile derivatives and these ACNs. They can be found in cigarette smoke. They can be found in production of resins, in synthetic fibers, so a lot of clothing material, rubbers, in casing for electronic equipment, in household appliances or toys or literally everyday objects, anything from kitchen utensils to furniture to office equipment, materials in 3D printers. They're saying that the ACN group is one that's definitely on the rise with up-to-date technological advances. And this ACN is metabolized primarily through the glutathione S transferase pathway. And we've seen that, again, polyphenols can not only reduce the reactive oxygen species level, but they also can directly support glutathione concentration and aid in antioxidant enzyme activity. This study goes further and looks at quercetin and hesperidin as unique biocompounds or polyphenols that have reversed the effects also of the oxidative stress specifically from the ACN exposure, and how these compounds can come down to reduce the levels of even DNA damage while increasing the activity of antioxidant enzymes, how they have neuroprotective effects, especially denoted to quercetin, and how this can improve dopamine transmission throughout the brain, and then how curcumin can eliminate the negative effects of the oxidative stress. And curcumin, quercetin were two called out in addition to that hesperidin, which we'll see the hesperidin in our BioC Plus.
I was gonna say,
citrus quercetin zest would be lovely. Yep. And then, you know, again, another dose of the quercetin with the curcumin in our inflammasome, which would be a double dip there.
Okay. And then there are other kind of areas of emerging research where we're seeing other compounds that can kind of ameliorate the impact of these microplastics.
Yes. So EGCG, as I alluded to in tea, as long as you're not getting it in a plastic tea bag, this would be really favorable because it actually can eliminate the NF-kappa B signaling, which is an inflammatory pathway. It can inhibit the influence of the expression of genes that actually drive more of the atherogenic factors or those pro-inflammatory plaque-driving factors of interleukins or C-reactive protein and even driving adhesion molecules. So we can see that EGCG from tea consumption can be protective against the influence on a DNA level as well as on an arterial level, supporting our arteries and offsetting overall that reactive oxygen species.
Okay, and then this study on catfish, I believe, looked at supplementation with lycopene and chlorella as potentially promising compounds that could reduce the microplastic influence.
Yes, it looked at lycopene, citric acid, and chlorella. And, you know, at this time, we don't have human studies to this level because this was actually an intervention-based study where they challenged and then did tissue assessments of the kidneys, the intestines, and the liver tissue. But they did see that those three compounds all prevented the microplastic-induced morphological or histochemical abnormalities. So basically the changes that happen on a cellular level and on an inflammatory level or oxidative stress level were actually significantly impacted through a challenge of these three compounds. They saw that lycopene reduced the histological damage to the liver and kidney. They saw that the lycopene also had the ability to reduce fibrosis along with other carotenoids, and that it prevented even the atrazine-induced renal pathology by supporting the cytochrome P450 enzyme pathway. So those same detox properties.
Okay, so good argument for antioxidants, herbs, mm-hmm. seasoning, spices, produce. And this is where I think a carnivore diet wouldn't be the best approach to combating microplastics, if you will.
Yeah, we really don't see anything right now on an amino acid level, mm-hmm. for instance, right? To really support ridding the body or protecting the body from the exposure or influence. And that's my biggest argument, you know, is that, again, you know, and just like people say, well, you have a liver and kidneys, why do you have to do a detox? Well, we have not evolved yet to take on this level of toxic exposure. So same thing. Are there some traditional tribes that were able to make it carnivore? Sure. But we want to get an array of herb seasoning, spices, and phytocompound rich produce to have that abundance of antioxidants to offset the reactive oxygen species from the daily industrialized toxin exposure.
Totally. And yeah, those tribes weren't like drinking out of these lined coffee cups and dealing with receipts or eating their food out of packages. So
no doubt,
there's that.
Or wearing Lululemon,
right.
You know, all of it. Yeah. So I think that those are some of the areas where other health minded individuals might fall into as just the living in a modernized society kind of thing. So I think big picture beyond, you know, these buzzworthy polyphenols of focus, of course, getting the phase two sulfur containing compounds from our cruciferous vegetables. So broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, these are really important to support the body's detox processes. 2 to 3 cups of leafy greens per day. We know that chlorophyll has favorable influence on protecting against microplastic exposure. So super greens cube coming in full effect. And again, bonus if you're adding in that E3 live to get that chlorella, which helps on a cellular level to support detoxification without chelating minerals. Citrus is key. So getting that zest for that hesperidin and also other bioflavonoids that we see. Nobilin was called out in one of the research studies as well, which is going to be that kind of pith, that furry pith on your citrus. That's going to be a big driver to aid in flushing out these toxins. Garlic, onions, shallots, all of the allium family with sulfur can help to activate the liver and support both phase one and phase two detox enzyme pathways. Looking at, again, tea in any form. So it could be our flower power green, our boss mode, or of course, the antioxidant-rich rooibos and hibiscus in the Uglow Girl. But we do see the tea leaf itself having those polyphenols in the EGCG, which can be anti-inflammatory and antioxidant-rich, just making sure that it's a bulk loose leaf tea. Berries would be huge, as well as ensuring that you're getting enough fiber to bind, because that daily bowel movement is going to be another excretion pathway secondary to sweat. And of course, hydration is equally important to help to flush out the toxins and move that lymph.
Let's talk probiotics, because there's actually some compelling evidence that probiotics can aid in removing microplastics, or at least protecting our cells against damage.
Yes. So the part of the mechanism of the toxicity effects of microplastics or nanoplastics is on the gut microbiome. So the concern is that the intestinal epithelial barrier of the gut can get damaged from these microplastics, driving leaky gut, that the microplastics themselves can drive inflammatory chemical release, stressing out immune-mediated cells of the GALT, or the gut-associated lymphatic tissue. So we can see mast cell activation issues with macrophage, et cetera. And then we look at the IgA producing cells of the gut. We think of that secretory IgA as a marker of that mucosal tissue and health. But we can see IgA secretion going too high in exposure, just like with a gut pathogen, or over time getting worn down. And then what's more is we can see an influence on our short chain fatty acids. So like our butyrate and these fuel sources for our gut, these fermentation products, that can also play a downstream role in mediating inflammation in the body, as well as even managing our entire central nervous system. So this study actually looked at the broad influence of probiotics on toxins in humans. And so they looked at like the L-Raminis, which is in our women's flora, to absorb 61% of aflatoxin. So not in the microplastic space, but still something that we're seeing as an increased risk in the world of microtoxins and inhalants. But specific to microplastics, they actually saw that the L-Acidophilus NCFM, which is the exact strain that we use in our Restore Baseline probiotic, our Targeted Strength probiotic, our Rebuild Spectrum probiotic, and our Kids Biotic, that L-Acidophilus NCFM was able to actually inhibit DNA damage and cell death that was induced by phthalate exposure by altering the expression of the genes on an mTOR pathway and a MAPK pathway level.
Okay, very cool. So taking a high quality probiotic, and I think there's an argument there for the women's flora on another level too. Mm-hmm. But we know that these microplastics are everywhere. And we've given a lot already in terms of what we can do in reducing them in our environments, swap outs we can make, and some suggestions of food as medicine. But let's maybe talk about just a few more ways that we can protect our bodies from this influence, protect ourselves from, you know, the things we can't modify or can't get rid of.
Yeah. So just kind of the overarching themes, you know, I would say for sure, it's a high call to action to ensure that you're doing a quarterly 10-day detox with targeted nutritional supplemental support. So, you know, when we look at our Reset, Restore, Renew detox packs, they are comprised to have three capsules to support that phase two detoxification. They have one capsule for that phase one liver activation and one capsule of an antioxidant blend to protect during the detox process from that oxidative stress or those reactive oxygen species. So each pack of those five capsules is going to be supportive on both protecting the cells down to the level of the DNA from the exposure, offsetting the influencing mechanisms of action of destruction, but also aiding in the excretion and removal. So I would say it wouldn't hurt to incorporate a Reset, Restore, Renew detox pack daily, but at least quarterly doing that focused 10-day detox. Secondary to detox, or in the world of supporting the excretion, is that sweating, right? So get out and sweat, ideally daily. Get some natural infrared through the sun and consider the sunlight and sauna, the infrared sauna. We'll link that. And if you use Ali Miller RD, you will get savings on your purchase. So you can check that out. The third way, of course, beyond sweating is going to end urination from the hydration goals is going to be, again, bowel output. So make sure you are pooping daily, at least one cup of bowel mass. And if your bowels don't look right, that might be a call out to consider our Beat the Bloat cleanse and ensure that your microbiome is working for you, because there definitely seems to be some genotoxic connections. And again, genetic expression influences based on the microbiome influence. So making sure that that perfect poop is happening. And if not, go and check out our Beat the Bloat program that we have going on live, and at least consider the targeted strength probiotic and potentially that women's flora probiotic as far as detox support. Focus on weight loss, especially if holding excessive body weight, remembering that microplastics shed from the fat. So potentially checking out our 12-week keto class to get that wheel moving. Bracco detox, I didn't talk about sulforaphane, but that came up time and time again in the literature. So Bracco detox would be a lovely supplement suggestion. Cellular antioxidants for that GST pathway, which can get taxed by all of the forms of microplastics and nanoplastics. So upping your N-acetylcysteine and glutathione would be a strong recommendation. Bio-C plus wouldn't hurt, especially our form of vitamin C with that hesperidin in there and the quercetin. And then we talked about either super turmeric or the inflammasome as other potential tools.
All right. I think we did it. And hopefully that leaves you with some hope about what you can do about all of this, some ways that you can, you know, offset your exposure, and some things to think about in terms of just reducing overall exposure and voting, you know, with your dollar for these companies that are putting things in glass and trying to steer you away from microplastics in their formulations and whatnot.
No doubt. As always, we will put all of these links in the show notes. And what I love about these supplement and food as medicine solutions is that they are broad stroke, and you'll get a synergy of benefit when you bring these into your daily regimen. So by upping your antioxidant status, not only are you protecting against microplastics, but you're protecting against toxic metals. You're protecting against inflammation. I mean, and the list continues to go on. So I would say don't get stuck with like an ostrich with your head in the sand about worrying about if there's microplastics in your body. Go through the process and do the work to support detox, because that's going to be a broad stroke that's going to help regardless of what's coming around the next corner or the multitude of factors that we're dealing with just living in a dirty world. If you enjoyed today's episode, go on over and leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening, whether that is on Spotify or Apple iTunes. And as always, make sure that you check out Ali Miller RD and Social and Naturally Nourished YouTube for more support.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at alimillerrd.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Ali and Becky at Ali Miller RD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.